Welcome to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons, helping you boost your health, energy, and productivity.
Hi there, and welcome to another episode of the Thrive TV Show. I'm Lauren Parsons, your host, and today I'm joined by Lottie Roberts from Wellington, New Zealand, who is the founder of Mind You. So welcome, Lottie.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you for inviting me.
So nice to have you here. Today we're talking about mindfulness as a superpower for leadership and performance, and something we're both really passionate about. And you're such an expert in this, Lottie. So we're going to be talking about what mindfulness is and isn't, why it can be a superpower, and it's why it's needed now more than ever, and how it's really relevant for leaders. So before I go into all of that, Lottie, can I just ask you my this and that questions?
Sure, go for it.
So tell me, spots or stripes?
Actually stripes, even though I'm wearing spots.
Oh, I wonder, because you're both wearing spots today. I thought that was hilarious. It's like, okay, so both maybe.
Yeah. I like both, but I am a bit of, I've got more stripes in my wardrobe.
Nice. Okay. Mountaintop or beachfront?
Mountaintop.
Nice. City or countryside?
Countryside.
Okay. Nice. Burgers or pizza?
Burgers without the bun.
Yes. Cats or dogs?
Oh, cool. Dogs. Yeah, dogs. I like them both though.
And would you rather be able to speak 10 languages fluently or play 10 musical instruments beautifully?
10 musical instruments.
Oh, musical. Very nice. Wonderful. Well, Lottie Roberts has been guiding organisations to lead and navigate change, challenge and uncertainty for over 20 years. A former senior leader of large teams and transformation programs, Lottie discovered mindfulness to help her navigate her own challenges and change in the form of an autoimmune condition, chronic pain and corporate burnout. Through her own personal journey with mindfulness, she instantly saw the opportunity to integrate a mindful approach into the DNA of how organisations operate. Supported by her firm belief that organisational performance, culture change and transformation is mindfulness in action. So it's lovely to have you with me. Do you want to just share a little bit, to share a bit of your story of how did you get into what it is that you're doing now?
Yeah, it mentions a little bit in the bio, but I actually came into the practice of mindfulness about 13, 14 years ago. At the time, I was a leader, and I was also 5 months postpartum suffering from postnatal sort of anxiety, depression. And also that was when my sort of chronic pain had begun. And I'm someone who's a little bit of a planner. I'm very organized, probably a lot like you, Lauren, you know, like really like to do things well. And if something's not right in my life, I kind of like, what do I do now to sort it out? Mm-hmm. And I was in a place where I actually just had no plan, which was really new for me. And I'd been to the doctors and things like that, and they just wanted to prescribe me either some kind of meds, either for the physical pain or the mental pain. And I was breastfeeding at the time, so I didn't feel comfortable with that. And it just happened to be, I kind of believe that sometimes there's this beautiful synchronicity in the universe. And I was sitting in a waiting room, and I just saw on a wall this sign that said, do you live with chronic pain and depression, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, that's me. Let's read on. Joined this 8-week mindfulness course. Wow. And I signed up straight away and went on this course. And it sounds a little bit cliche, but it did change my life, you know. And when I say change my life, changing your life doesn't happen like that, like, you know, overnight. Mm-hmm. Over the course of that 8 weeks, I started to notice things that were actually really profound. Seeing my baby smile, you know, at the time, enjoying being a mum, because I also had a 3-year-old as well at the same time. Being able to be with my pain in a much more befriending way. I like, it's like befriending your pain in a way. And I just started showing up differently. And then so I began the practice of mindfulness. And when I eventually went back to work, I started to notice I turned up differently as a leader. You know, as a leader, I'd got to where I was in the organization through working hard, you know, going through the steps, being really conscientious. But that could sometimes be to my detriment, which is why I'm passionate about it for leaders. And I started noticing that I was maybe not so controlling and micromanaging, or noticing when I was like that, because I could sometimes have that tendency. When my emotions were coming up and an impulsive emotional response was going to come up that was possibly unhelpful, versus noticing it and responding in a more helpful way. And actually, like, over time, like I say, this didn't happen overnight. Like, I went back to being a leader and I worked really hard, and my corporate burnout actually came like much later, but I was able to notice it and also really think about what do I want out of my life, probably because of my strong practice of mindfulness, which when I did eventually leave the corporate world to start my own business, I knew it would have something to do with mindfulness. I was like, this practice is so undersold and so useful in so many ways to people from all walks of life in all positions. Mm. So that's kind of how I came into, as a short run of that story.
Yeah, fantastic. And it is amazing, your personal experience. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to some aspects of that. And we're going to chat a lot today about mindfulness and how it applies to us as leaders. So let's start by talking about what is mindfulness and what is it not?
Yeah, and I love that we're going to unpack what it is and what it isn't, because I think mindfulness generally has had a little bit of misbranding, or people have a misconception as to what it is. Mm-hmm. So, like, textbook answer is like mindfulness is about being present, like being in the moment, having moment-to-moment awareness without judgment, which actually is really hard. There's a caveat without the judgment, which is just more to notice the judgments, because we've all got them, and to be open and not to be overly overwhelmed, you know. So this is what I mentioned about, you know, pausing and then a helpful response. So really, mindfulness is a way of being in the world, in your life, in your relationships, in your role, that is really about present moment awareness, getting to understand yourself, understand your how you react to the world around you. Mm-hmm. What are you noticing? Like I said, all of a sudden I noticed my baby smile. My baby was always smiling, but I didn't notice it because I was so up in my head, being aware of the thought patterns and the emotions that come up, and using that awareness as a source of insight and wisdom rather than a shoot from the hip response that could possibly be very unhelpful and quite damaging to yourself and others around you. Mm. It's a huge subject, mindfulness. Like, it's so massive. And I think people think, oh, it's just about, you know, going on a 2 or 4 week course and you'll get it, because it is about a lived experience. And another way I actually really describe it is that it's about being, like, being with the nature of reality. And sometimes the nature of reality is that life can suck. Yeah. So when I say about what mindfulness isn't, it's not about everything being unicorns and rainbows and being happy all the time, because that's not reality. There are hard things going on in people's lives, whether it be facing world events or facing events very personal to us, like pain, illness, loss, grief, just having lots of things on. What we have a tendency to do as humans is want to escape that. You know, we're very much like threat or reward responsive. We run away from a threat, we protect ourselves from a threat, or we move towards reward. Well, the threats that we have in the world now, they're not usually a threat in the present moment to our physical life, but our body's physiology reacts to something, any threat, like it's an imminent threat to your life. And that's not helpful in the moment. So if we can start to understand and regulate our emotions, so if I get an email that pushes all my buttons in the moment, mm-hmm. and you want to go and send something back, that's probably not going to be helpful. I'm going to maybe shoot some bullets via email that are not going to be good for my relationship, going to make somebody else feel bad as well. Mm. If I pause and reflect and really think, should I send this while I'm in this state? Am I really reading? Should I maybe ask some questions, because I could be misinterpreting it? Maybe I'll sit on it overnight. That's mindful awareness in that moment. That's just so, so unbelievably useful. Yeah. It isn't about necessarily being calm and happy all the time. That's what it isn't. However, a result can be that you are calmer and happier in your life, because mm-hmm. you're able to understand yourself and work with yourself and have this gentle acceptance and friendliness towards yourself as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really key distinction. And it reminds me a little bit of the difference between, we talk about positive psychology and how that's not about just pretending to be happy all the time or pretending to be positive all the time and that toxic positivity. It's that really, as you shared so beautifully, it's about acknowledging how you're feeling without the judgment. And you can immediately see, you know, the applicability for that, for parents, for leaders, for friends, just for all of us, yeah, as you say, to be able to respond more thoughtfully, more mindfully, more calmly, rather than shooting from the hip. Because we all, as you say, we all have our buttons pressed at times. And I'm sure we've all had moments that we think, oh, if only I hadn't done that at that time.
Totally. Yeah.
So tell me, do you feel like right now it is more challenging for people to be mindful, or perhaps a better question is, what are the challenges in our lives that stop us from being able to be mindful and live this way all the time?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of a double-ended question in that I think it's more important than ever for us to be mindful, but in some ways there is more challenge there because, I could say we're in the most challenging times ever, but actually I just think we're and maybe we are or maybe we aren't, but we're more aware of challenges because of social media and just there's just so much information coming at us. And because our body and our mind really responds to threat and negativity, that's where we pay attention. And so if it can be, because we're in that reactive cycle, it's harder to be mindful. However, if we build up a practice of mindfulness, we're less likely to be reactive and to respond more wisely. So it's a little bit like a chicken and the egg. So the first thing is really to calm your nervous system. And as much as mindfulness isn't like an instantaneous calming of your nervous system, things like ways that you can bring practices into calm, like whatever it would be, breath work, yoga, whatever it would be. But you know, being in meditation, which is how you practice, it's like your workout for mindfulness. So if you want to be a runner, or you know, you want to be really strong, you lift weights or you go out jogging, that's your practice. With mindfulness, it tends to be meditation. So meditation and mindfulness are not the same. Meditation is your workout to become mindful, and also specifically mindfulness meditation, because not all meditations are mindfulness meditation. So if you're listening to a meditation, it's like you're floating on a cloud and, you know, imagine some sparkly things in the air, and that's not mindfulness meditation. Mindfulness meditation is, again, sitting in presence and your own reality, which might be, if you've got chronic pain, it might be exploring your chronic pain, or it may be sitting with the breath, but it's sitting with something that's generally present moment. So, if you can start to bring that in to start with, when people meditate, they just go, oh, my mind's so busy and I really hated it. And it's like, but you have to stick with it. And then it's almost like burning through. So the challenge becomes less of a challenge to become mindful. So I think I answered your question there. You said, is it more challenging? Well, there's more challenge around us that makes it more challenging. However, by practicing it and keep coming back, if you've got the right, you understand its why and why it's there, you will find that you're able to face into those challenges with more equanimity, more sort of groundedness. Yeah.
So that word equanimity, can you just give us a definition of what that means?
It's interesting because I use it so frequently now, but when I started practicing mindfulness, they'd say equanimity and I go, what's that then? So, but it's actually quite a beautiful word. And I think what we all aspire to, it's basically the end goal in some ways of mindfulness, which is to have a gentle acceptance with what is. It's not the same as apathy, which is you're with it because you just don't care anymore. It's like, I wish some of the things that are happening in the world aren't happening. My heart, I can feel it. I feel sad for it, but it doesn't overwhelm me so much that I am of no use to myself and I can't be with it. So equanimity is that gentle acceptance. So for example, I still suffer from chronic pain. I had a chronic pain attack just 48 hours ago, which meant I didn't sleep all night. It was pretty debilitating for me. However, I know it will pass. I can be with my breath in this moment. I have an acceptance that it's there. And as much as it's there, I actually have a really, really good life. And I'm really grateful for that. And I have a lot in it. I wish I didn't have chronic pain. I wish it wasn't there, but I'm not a victim to it. You know, it's something I experience and then it goes and then I experience it again, which is a little bit like life. Life sucks, then it sings, then it sucks, then it sings. It's if it sung all the time, it wouldn't be as sweet. Mm. So, yeah.
You're powerful. And I was just reading, I actually have known you for a while now, Lottie, and I did not know that you have chronic pain. I saw your beautiful post about that recently, saying that you don't want to be defined by it, that you don't always talk about it. But it's really interesting hearing you share that about your story and your experience. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
So I really liked as well what you said about doing meditation being your workout. So for people listening in, perhaps that haven't done a lot with mindfulness, perhaps maybe other than just heard of it or done a few little things with it, can you just describe that a little bit more in terms of, so if people want to get better at it, you're saying they can do mindfulness meditation and think of that like their workout, and that will have a flow on effect to the rest of their lives. Can you just explain that a bit more?
Yeah, 100%. So I like to think of meditation as a little bit like brushing your teeth. So most people don't think, yay, I'm going to brush my teeth this morning. I can't wait. It's such an awesome thing to do. But we do it every morning and every evening because we know it's good for our dental health. Meditation is the same for your mental health. It's not necessarily going to be something that you're going to sit for 10 minutes and you're just going to have some, you know, like nirvana experience that's going to be amazing. Indeed, sometimes you can sit for 10 minutes and you can actually really enjoy it. But sometimes you can sit for 10 minutes and go, oh my God, my mind is a hell house today. It really is. Or I'm fidgety. I'm sitting here and I've got so much to do and I'm just sitting here and nothing's getting done. Or you might notice, oh my God, my shoulder is really sore right now and I had not even noticed it, or I'm tired. And so it's not something that's necessarily always pleasant, but it's about being with yourself, really cultivating present moment experience, present moment awareness. So you're sitting there, and there are different ways, different types of mindfulness meditation and different ways to do it. But basically what often happens when you start is you would get an anchor of some sort that's an anchor in the present. Mm-hmm. Your breath, for example. So the breath is always present. You can't focus on a breath that happened 10 minutes ago. It's gone. So, you know, it would be notice your breathing. How do you know you're breathing? How does the breath come and go in the body? Something we often just do and don't even notice it.
Absolutely.
You pay attention. You notice as you inhale, your chest expands, your belly expands. As you exhale, there's a little bit of relaxation. You notice the pause between them. So as you're paying attention to that, you're in the moment. But as you're doing it, you'll notice, oh, did I put the washing out? Did I remember to answer that email from the school? Did I remember to, you know, hand that thing in that I was supposed to do at work? You notice it, your mind wanders off, because the nature of the mind is that it's going to wander. In fact, it wanders, research shows, about 47% of the time, yes, which means you're not present for half the time, which is kind of like you're not even in your life. So, but the thing is, you know, it's nothing wrong with it wandering. It doesn't mean that you're getting a D minus for your meditation. It's the practice of noticing every time your mind has wandered off. You notice, you bring it back to the breath. That's like a bicep curl for your brain.
I love that. That's such a lovely analogy for people listening, and especially if this is new for you, to go, oh, it's actually okay for my mind to wander off and for it to come back. And so what you're saying is each time that we do that, we get better. And so it becomes easier over time, would you say?
Yeah. And then you sort of notice, so like when I run 8-week courses on this, and you, so I'm seeing these people like have a reflections every week and noticing things. And to start with, they might just notice, oh, I felt like really annoyed when my children kept disturbing me when I was trying to eat dinner. But this time I noticed it, and the way I spoke to them was just so much more settled, and I've not done that before. And that is like the meditation, like on the cushion or on the chair, is then emanating out and turning up outside, like in your day-to-day life. So, you know, that's a really good example. And I think that for people, you know, one of the things I'll say to people is there's no wrong way to do meditation. Just sit for 10 minutes, try to notice your breath or scan through your body or listen to sounds. And notice what, or just none of that, just notice where your mind goes. And every time you notice where it goes, is there a repeated place that your mind goes? Maybe a self-criticism kind of voice in your head that it goes to, and then noticing it and bringing it back to the present moment. And then you start to sort of notice your thought patterns. You start to see why you're actually kind of starting to form a really true relationship with yourself and really true understanding of the inner landscape of your mind through the meditation. So, yeah.
Right. And so when I hear all of this, and I know it is a superpower, as you say, for people listening that might be going, well, this sounds really interesting, but maybe a bit fluffy. Mm-hmm. And Lottie was telling us that she's all about leadership, you know, and perhaps we have a stereotype of thinking about leaders as being tough and strong, and, you know, it may be hard for people to see how these match up. So love to just hear your thoughts on why mindfulness is so important for leaders.
Yeah. So I think as a leader, and I know from my experience of being a leader, you know, I don't think anybody goes into work, particularly or goes to be a leader and wants to be a bad leader. However, most leaders are in a system that means you've got endless to-do lists, you're working extra hours, you've got multiple challenges that you're having to navigate. You've normally got more on your list than you can get through. And then you have this team of people that need your support and presence, and you're trying to do all of these things. But in the meantime, you're getting more and more stressed yourself, probably more and more burnt out, and possibly losing your way in terms of focusing on what's really important, which usually is about being present with your people and seeing what do they need, how am I responding to them, how can I support them, what are some of the ways that I'm showing up as a leader that will be helpful, and the behaviors that will be helpful versus the ones that won't be helpful. When you're in that vortex of busyness, stress, overwhelm, lots of expectations, it's really hard to be that person. And you might not even be aware that you're that person anymore. And I know for me, like, I've always wanted in my career to be like someone that focuses on people. It's always, you know, my background is change. That's all about people. It's all about getting people to really, you know, thrive from the inside out. And I know that as I was in this system, I was becoming less of that. You know, I was actually not that nice to deal with sometimes. Sometimes if something showed up that wasn't as, you know, as a high achiever myself, if something showed up that from one of my team and it wasn't quite like I wanted, it was like opening a present you didn't want at Christmas. I found it very hard to, you know, I was probably not very motivational, and then would then end up doing things myself. And, you know, there's a lot of things as a leader that I did well, but there was a lot of things I didn't. And a lot of that came from being in a competitive environment that was high pressure, high expectations, and gave no room for vulnerability. Now, as I started practicing mindfulness, I noticed myself changing. I noticed myself pausing before I made a decision. Mm-hmm. I noticed that my ability to make decisions was better. And if I was to talk about it from a brain point of view, you know, a lot of leaders, they're working from their amygdala. They're working from their stress response center. Now, your stress response center, when it's switched on, and a lot of leaders, they probably had their amygdala switched on all the time. In that moment, you shut down the areas of the brain that help you make decisions, that help you regulate your emotions, that help you be more creative. You know, these are really, really important parts of the brain as a leader. Exactly. And so you're practicing almost the opposite of what needs to be practiced to be a good leader.
Mm. And I think this is really key, because when we understand the science of it, it makes complete sense. You know, you'd never want to, I don't know, sort of head into battle without your armor on. And it's like, you'd never want to head into making a decision and literally losing that prefrontal cortex, losing all of that decision-making, emotional regulation facility. But that, as you say, is something that I think a lot of us experience, because, as you mentioned earlier, those threats that we assess, which we're constantly looking for, we respond to them with that fight or flight response, don't we? And
it's recognizing you're in that. So we hear a lot about, I don't know if you've heard the phrase metacognition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And metacognition is about being aware. I'm the type of person that sometimes does that. Like, I'm the type of person that sometimes is impatient, or I'm the type of person that likes to do things really well and is like a high performer. So that's metacognition. Yeah, me too.
I'm like, yes.
Meta-awareness, and this is what we build up through the practice of mindfulness, because it's not, you know, some of the ways that you are, they've been there. Those habits and traits have been there for a long time, although I will say they can be changed. Yes. Over time. Anything, you are what you practice. You are what your habits are, okay? But meta-awareness, which is different to metacognition, is when you become aware in the moment that you're doing that thing that you do.
Mm.
Metacognition is knowing some of the places that you go to. Meta-awareness is knowing when you've gone to that place in the moment and going, ah, I'm here. Maybe this is that moment where I could just pause and go, what is the best thing for me to do in those next few moments? Mm. And I think we, as leaders, they can quite often be, and I say this not from a place of judgment, I say this from a place of having experienced it myself and knowing that I can, if I went back into the environment I was in before I left, I think I would possibly show some of those traits. And that's why I'm really passionate about changing systems within organizations rather than just saying to a leader, you're burnt out, you need to do all these self-care practices to be less burnt out. I think leaders taking responsibility to be more mindful is definitely important, but also leaders work together to create a more mindful environment where people can thrive, because that's not necessarily the environment that we're creating and cultivating in a lot of workplaces. And I know that's why you, Lauren, and me are so passionate about what we do. It's like, how do you change the system? So there's mindful systems, there's mindful leaders, there's mindful teams. This is like, we need to be the first man on the hill dancing in that flash mob to get everybody else doing it. And so, you know, it's explaining to leaders, like, you might be busy, but if you spend 15 minutes every morning meditating and then after that being really intentional about your day and also looking at what has gone well rather than focusing on the challenges, your day, your leadership, your team, everything will benefit from that.
Absolutely. And that's
not wasted.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, what are some practical things that leaders can do? So you've just shared three right there. So in the morning, spend 15 minutes practicing mindfulness like you referred to before, perhaps just anchoring off your breath, not thinking about other things, or when you do, coming back to that, being intentional during your day. What are some other things, practical ideas of ways? Perhaps I'm interested in what are the things you recommend in workplaces, you know, in the way I often recommend certain things. I think, you know, the way that you start a meeting or you close a meeting or in your one-on-ones, I think those are amazing times to really shape your workplace culture. Yeah. What are the things you recommend leaders do?
Yeah, so just going back, the meditation is about putting it in a time when it can fit you, because I will say to people, like, find 10 to 15 minutes somewhere. If it's you're putting in a place that it's impossible, then it's not going to happen. So for some people, it might be lunchtime. It might be, so it doesn't have to necessarily be in the morning. For me, I did the morning. I like to set up my day like that. And also, it's not about not thinking. Your mind is designed to think. There's no way you'll get through a minute without thinking anything unless you're asleep. And sleeping is not meditation. It's about noticing where your thoughts are going. And so that's great. Get that regular practice. Also, I like to talk about what I call mindfulness confetti. Yes. Because this is about how you can sprinkle mindfulness in your day. So there are, particularly for time poor people, you'll actually be surprised how many times in the day there are when you're waiting for something in a queue, or you're commuting, or you're in a cab, or you're waiting for your coffee. Okay, those moments, rather than getting your phone out, use that as an opportunity to feel your feet on the floor. Notice your hands at your side and just notice a few breaths coming in and coming out and just checking in with your emotions. What's your emotional state right now? And it could be you're just about to go off to a meeting. If you were to do that, you might go, actually, I'm really agitated about the meeting I've just come from. And the people that I'm going to, they don't need that baggage. So why don't I just reset, calm down, and think, how would be the best way for me to arrive in this next meeting? So that's a couple of things in terms of an organizational level. I think it's really good to actually build those check-ins at the beginning and end of meetings, you know. So, and also make meetings so it's not like hour to hour. So if we had every meeting that was like, rather than an hour, it'd be 50 minutes, or rather than half an hour, it's 25 minutes. So there's that time, and actually have a discipline, a boundary of finishing on that, not using up the 10-minute or 5-minute slack. And using those moments for people to recalibrate, which could be they don't have to kind of be sitting around in lotus position around the organization. It could be just that moment of gathering up, regathering, what happened just there? How am I feeling right now? What do I need? Maybe jot something down so you're not holding it in your brain and just to forget it. And then into the next meeting, you know, how do I want to show up in this next meeting? What's my attitude like? And, you know, the three kind of pillars that make up mindfulness are your attention. Where is your attention right now? Mm-hmm. What's your attitude right now? And there are some attitudes of mindfulness. You can look them up. There are things like gratitude, acceptance, non-striving, trust, kindness. So you can like, where is my attitude right now? Is it, you know, where is it? And then intention. What's my intention? What do I want to bring to the next moments of the day? Mm. And so bringing those together and having awareness, which is kind of like, I guess, the container that holds them all. If you imagined like doing that more often, not 100% of the time, I'm not mindful 100% of the time. I still lose it sometimes, but way less. And also I think for leaders particularly, so there was a study done of 30,000 C-suite leaders by a company called The Potential Project that wrote an amazing book called The Mind of the Leader. And these were really known as being really successful leaders, successful in terms of team engagement, not just bottom line figures. Mm. And they were asked what they thought the key to success was. And there were three main kind of areas. And these three main areas, I believe, are what make up mindful leadership. So the first was kind of mindful presence. So when you're in a meeting, are you really there? Mm. When you're doing a one-on-one with one of your team, are you really listening? Are you really present? Are you actively listening rather than listening to respond? Mm. Are you present in terms of what's going on for you, that meta-awareness? The second pillar was around compassion. And I know you spoke to Steve Hargreaves. Mm. So this is compassion, obviously compassion to others. Even though they might not be people you like very much, there's a difference between compassion and kindness. You can still have compassion for people that annoy you. You know, if you found out one of them that their mother had died or something like that, even if you didn't like them, you would have compassion for them. Kindness normally is harder to access, but compassion you can, but also compassion, self-compassion, which a lot of leaders, they are one of the reasons why they get to burnout is they just haven't been compassionate. They don't want to show vulnerability. They don't, you know, we're all doing the best we can, but they just don't give themselves that slack. And then the third pillar is self-orientation, which is that are you in it for yourself or are you in it for the bigger picture, you know? Mm-hmm. Are you aware when maybe you've lost that integrity of the kind of leader you want to be and then what's showing up in the moment? That meta awareness really comes into that. So that they were the three main things that came up for those 30,000. And I thought that's powerful. That's a powerful selling point for mindful leadership.
Absolutely. And it just makes me think about how we often are doing ourselves a disservice by being physically present. But somehow almost thinking that we're going to get ahead by planning in our mind the next meeting we're heading into or thinking through some bullet points for that thing or picturing that thing that we've got to later. It's like we're mentally multitasking or, like you say, not actively listening to respond, you know, getting ready what we want to jump in and say next rather than really being present. And yet when you flip that, if you picture that you could be fully present in this moment, you know, for me now in this interview or in the next meeting that I'm going into, I actually happen to have seven meetings today, Lottie. So what you were saying before about the recalibrating is great, because even though I know all of this, it's just a really good reminder. I mean, I've got my emotional culture deck right here, which is a tool that both Lottie and I use. It's how we got connected. Yeah, exactly. And it's just a good reminder. And not all of them, this is the only interview today. A lot of them are client meetings and potential client meetings. And I have done, because I had so many meetings today with only short breaks, I've done a lot of prep for all of them ahead, like this morning. But it's just a nice little reminder for me to think, just in those few moments before I head into the next meeting. I love that. I really love the power of intention setting. How do I show up in this moment?
The next few moments.
I get inspired just picturing, imagine if leaders in organizations, you know, all around the country, all around the world, were more mindful before they headed into meetings, were more mindful before they walked into the building, were more mindful before they answered the phone or even opened their laptops for the day. It is, you can just see that flow on, the superpower effect.
Yeah, and then one other key point, I'm another reason why I'm so passionate about this is, you know, there are a lot of challenging situations that we're facing globally, and a lot of those are not, they're going to be dealt with, I think, at an industry level. And so leaders actually have a lot of power. And so like when you're making decisions around, I don't know what suppliers you use, what the impact is on the environment and on other people, are you really mindful about the ripple that's going out? Because I truly believe if all leaders CEOs, people that are, you know, we've got some, there's leaders that have got a lot of power in this world. If they were really making the right decisions for the environment and fellow humans, the world maybe wouldn't be as in much of a pickle as it is. And with the, every moment is a moment to start over. So maybe you haven't done it in the past, but you can, you know, the, and mindfulness is also about, you know, and we begin again. You know, the mind wanders, we come back to the moment. We come back with intention. What do we want at these next few days? So you had a, you've made some mistakes as a leader in the past. As long as you then become intentional about doing the right things in the future, that really matters. And I think for our future generations and for us supporting each other across the world, leaders, you have that, that mindful leadership is going to be one of the things that makes such a difference.
Really powerful stuff. Thank you so much, Lottie. I just feel like that's a beautiful point for us to finish on, although I don't really want to stop because I know that we could just, I'd love to just ask you more and more about your mindfulness practices and all the things that you do. But if people wanted to find out more about you, Lottie, how can they do that?
Yeah, so I have got a website, which is www.mindyou, and it's mindyou is mindu.co.nz. It's actually under construction, so my old one's up there, and I'm hoping my new, it's been a long project, which I've needed a lot of mindful patience on, which should be up soon. But I also am quite active on LinkedIn. I write a lot of my thoughts on LinkedIn, so that's probably a really good way. And also I'm on Instagram as Lottie. Roberts, but LinkedIn probably from a professional point of view is my main platform. So yeah, and just I'm really friendly. Drop me a line if you've got any questions. Like to think I'm friendly. You can tell me.
Absolutely. You'll be flooded. Your inbox will be flooded. And just for anyone that is watching or listening, do make sure you head to thrivetvshow.com and you'll be able to watch the video version of this interview if you haven't already seen it. And also all of the links will be down below in the show notes. So make sure you do that and check out if you want to connect with Lottie on LinkedIn and see all her amazing posts. So Lottie, just to wrap up, I'd love to ask if there's one final thing that you want to share with our listeners today, what would that be?
Every moment is a moment to begin again, and you're doing the best you can, so don't be too hard on yourself.
Beautiful. Every moment is a moment to begin again. Yeah, and all we have is now. It's so simple but so profound, isn't it? And I think, and so challenging to do. I know that you and I, we talked about how we're surrounded by weapons of mass distraction.
Yes.
And just being able to bring our attention back. So really powerful stuff. Thank you for sharing about mindfulness as a superpower for us all and as leaders. And thanks so much, Lottie. It's been great to connect with you.
It's been lovely talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in. That's been another episode of the Thrive TV Show. Go out and thrive.
Thank you for listening to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons. Visit thrivetvshow.com to access the show notes and discover our fantastic bonus content. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next inspiring episode.